Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, we're now a couple days removed from the NFL draft. Have you come down from that NFL draft high yet?
No. So here's how it works is like, you know, you look at all of the picks, and even if you do a lot of research beforehand and watch these guys and have the film study, which I've done less of in the last couple of years because I've been so invested in doing my job and covering Penn State football that, you know, in the offseason, it's just more film study for me on them instead of switching over to the draft. You still have this craving for, okay, now give me the approval I'm looking for in draft grades, which are useless, you know, in terms of like what they are. You know, they give you no tangible information, but they are, I think, maybe the more pure entertainment of okay, now I know who they're going to draft. That part settled. Now make me feel good about it. And so I have been consuming draft content the last 2 days straight, just mainlining conversations about, you know, which teams and which divisions did the best, et cetera, where these players go. Of course, I have my opinions of the Penn State players and how they fit into the NFL, but there is no, like, it'll be a couple of days before we come down off of this.
I've told you this before. I always love talking NFL football specifically with you, because you are so analytical whenever we talk Penn State versus me having emotion. But if we talk NFL, we talk Buffalo Bills, I can get some emotion out of you, which I love. So just tell me, what is it like in the T. Frank household as a Bills fan watching the NFL draft?
It's changed over the years. I used to, because I was so invested, I used to scout all of the football players so that I could, when they made a pick, go, hey, that was stupid. That was wrong. But since they started to win football games and be a meaningful contributor into the NFL conversation, you know, basically Josh Allen has made me care less, because I'll give you an example. In my family chat, my older brother, has kind of taken up the mantle as our team scout, because I'm doing all the Penn State stuff. And he, in the fourth round, was talking about Braylon Allen, and he's talking about they drafted a running back. And I just couldn't get worked up about a fourth round backup running back, because they have Josh Allen. Ah, there you go. But also, like, he's not, James Cook is the starting running back. So when we're talking about the fourth round, and he, my brother, wants a 260-pound running back that doesn't run with power, and I'm like, well, you know, what about this guy? The guy they drafted is fine, because that role, doesn't matter as much. Now, Keon Coleman terrifies me. They seem to be able to take these guys that both simultaneously have this upside of a guy who's not 21 yet, but also the way he plays football isn't good. You know, so he's a contested catch guy who only caught 30% of his contested catches last year. So, yeah, he goes up above the rim. He catches the football. He has some highlight reels, like, oh, wow, sort of plays. But he's not consistent whatsoever, and he's not explosively fast. So they went from Stephon Diggs, who's super elusive and shifty and explosive, well, maybe not as explosive as he used to be, to a guy who is not explosive but will go up and moss people. So, like, they're just trading one incomplete set for another. But when you're drafting at the end of the first round, I guess that's what you get now, instead of being able to get Roma Dunze or Marvin Harrison Jr., which they used to be able to be in those conversations, but now we're 3 minutes in the show, and you got me wound up. We don't need to talk that much about the Bills. You did it again.
I love Wound Up T. Frank. I want an entire show of Wound Up T. Frank. So if this is what it takes, I'm all for it, T. Frank. It's funny. We were talking about this earlier, you and I, about the differences in how you – now, I'm an Eagles fan. Mm-hmm. I still have some emotion. It's not quite the same as Penn State. But my favorite guy on the Eagles is Howie Roseman.
Oh, yeah.
He's the star of the team, isn't he?
He, you know, it's funny, a couple of years ago, didn't he get fired at some point or relegated because of Chip Kelly?
Yes.
And everyone's like, he's a terrible GM. Why would you take Jalen Hurts in the second round? And it's like, everyone has their misses. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside wasn't a great pick, but the process that he goes through of stocking the team for the future, being able to get future picks while also maintaining, they got the top two or two of the top three corners in the draft, and have a third, fourth, and a fifth, an extra third, fourth, and a fifth for next year. They were in the Super Bowl and had a top 10 pick. This is like the stuff I do on Madden, let alone in real life. So yeah, like if there was a GM that I would want to be in the NFL, Eric DaCosta of the Ravens, Howie Roseman of the Eagles are the two that just get it. They do the best job.
Well, my favorite was I had a friend who said to me how lucky the Eagles were. Things fell their way. It's crazy. But Howie Roseman gets lucky every year.
Yeah.
At what point does it stop being a coincidence? We've got to mention, as long as we're talking about teams that drafted well, we've got enough of our listeners, our Pennsylvania listeners. I hit on the Eagles. The Steelers also. Our buddy Landon talked about them quite a bit. Steelers did really well.
I was saying in round four, they were about to pick just a piece of rebarred concrete as their next pick because they went for hashtag grit in this draft. It was such a Steelers draft. Three offensive linemen and Roman Wilson, a Michigan wide receiver, in the first four picks. But here's the thing. It's like they needed those things. Peyton Wilson as a linebacker, if you remember him from the game, the Outback Bowl against Arkansas, I loved watching him on film. So they've got athletes that, you know, injury history there, but the players they came away with were what they needed and good football players. So like it just fit. It fit the Steelers. It was obnoxious. Like it was one of those things you're watching. You're like, oh really? You're drafting for hashtag grit again. And that probably is a good thing for them.
I like when you went into that voice. Is that your John Facenda voice?
I would have to know who that is. Sorry.
Oh my God. Oh my. I thought the youngsters listening would have an issue. When we're done, look him up. John Facenda, NFL Films. Okay.
Oh, the blustery tundra of Lambeau Field. Yeah. Yes, it was. That very much was.
Okay. Let's segue to the Penn State players. Just in general, what surprised you most? Anything strike you?
Curtis Jacobs not being drafted. You know, I don't make my opinion on Curtis as a person very ambiguous. I think he's an awesome dude. I appreciate him as a football player and as a person. And just not being drafted doesn't make any sense. You know, from an athletic testing perspective, he was 242 pounds and ran a 4.58. Now, it wasn't a 4.41. Like, it wasn't blazingly fast for a linebacker, but it's fast enough for a box linebacker, especially when you marry in his coverage skills. It's just he's a projection, and this particular draft, no NFL team seemed to want to take that chance to project a guy who played mostly Sam linebacker, didn't have great tape in the box, and then draft him and say like he's definitely going to work out. So I think he could be a starter for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's what they need as far as size, physicality, coverage. It's just a bit of a projection, and I'm really annoyed. Again, a guy I really like personally, and I like his game, going to the team that has broken my heart more times than anybody other than the Patriots, and it just sucks. So, yeah, I'm super happy he found that landing spot after the draft, but he should have been drafted. No question.
Again, I love T. Frank emotion. What was interesting to me about Curtis Jacobs, T. Frank, is we did a show pre-draft. And again, this is with Landon Tengwall. And we were going through the Penn State list of players. And we used two different mock drafts as our guide as we went through it. Many of them were very much in sync. Curtis Jacobs was the guy who had the most disparity. Yeah.
Yep.
So I was looking at one that had him picked like 207th. He had in his mock draft, he was picked 84th in the third round.
Yeah.
So already you see that variance. My question to you is, how does that happen that there's such a huge variance that he went from one mock draft thinking he's a third rounder to actually not being drafted?
Well, I wrote about this almost a year ago, actually over a year ago, talking about Curtis Jacobs' time at Penn State, where he was the ultimate teammate because he sacrificed the opportunity to play Will linebacker so the team could win. Getting Abdul Carter on the field in 2022 meant that he had to bump back over to Sam, because this is what happens in the Penn State defense: is you play the Sam as a younger player, and then you grow into the Will linebacker spot. Now, a guy like Tony Rojas skipped that step. Like, he did that during the spring and was so good and so big and so physical that they put him in the box. But Curtis Jacobs came in as a former receiver and safety who then played linebacker in 2020, so he had that role. But the problem was, when it was his turn to go over there, he wasn't great to start. And then he didn't really get a chance to get settled. So then in 2023, he's in the exact same situation, playing on third down, playing Mike sometimes. And then eventually, the way Kobe King developed, he didn't really even get a chance to do that as much. So he was always moonlighting, playing in the box. He never really had a chance to learn how to play and show he could play with guys getting on him fast and not playing with as much space. So when you have the physical tools and you're a good coverage player, but you never really show that ability to, you know, destroy blocks, get in the backfield, all those things, he didn't show great instincts there. And, you know, as much as I like Curtis and I believe that he can do it, there wasn't evidence. So what do you see? Do you project to the positive, or do you see the lack of ability in the tape? And I think that really that's part of the conversation. And he's a really good athlete. He wasn't the overwhelming athlete, again, running a 4.41 that you go, I don't care. He's going to obviously learn to be able to do it. And so then teams prioritized other things in their draft profile. I think maybe a little bit of length could be an issue too, you know, in terms of he doesn't have, I don't think he has 33 and a half inch arms or anything like that. So just some of those things where he maybe lost in the margins to other players that he was compared to led to where he is now.
Is this a situation, T. Frank, where in the draft, once you get to, say, the fourth round, fifth round, there's so little to separate players? You might have an undrafted free agent, or just because of somebody's internal biases, they're a fourth round pick or they're undrafted free agent.
So I don't think that, because I do think there are big differences in guys who project as... Give you an example. I think Hunter Norzad, bringing up the Bills again, I think Hunter Norzad projects as a long-term starter at guard or center in the NFL, goes to the Kansas City Chiefs, and then the Bills choose Cedric Van Pran out of Georgia, who is a higher floor player, but not as good of a long-term prospect, not as big, not as strong as Hunter Norzad, but the Bills wanted somebody who was a more sure bet. Hunter has high highs and low lows, so you have different variances of ability, and you have some of those scheme fit things as well. So that's the thing, is that there's not one thing that really is like, well, X, Y, or Z. There's a myriad of things that include like fit.
All right, let's stop it there for quarter one. I've got lots more draft questions coming up after this. We've had such a great response to our F45 Training State College promotion over the last 2 weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. Starting Monday, May 6th, and running through May 21st, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training and a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is T. Frank Carr. This is quarter number two of our show. Quarter number one, I got some emotion out of T. Frank. Why? Because we were talking NFL draft. We were talking about his Bills. And as I said, T. Frank, I love emotional T. Frank. I love it. So let's see if we can kind of poke that bear a little bit more here as we continue to talk about the draft. Let's get to a couple more of the Penn State players. We talked about perhaps the biggest surprise among Penn State players was Curtis Jacobs not getting drafted. I'm with you. I was surprised by that. Let's look a little bit about how the players fit with the teams they went to.
Yep.
Olufashinu, he went to the Jets. We knew he was going to go fairly high, maybe be the second or third tackle taken in the draft. Taken by the Jets. I think it's really cool. He's going to be the protector for Aaron Rodgers. You're a Buffalo Bills guy, so you know that division.
Yeah, just Let me go on this one because you want emotion. I am so unbelievably frustrated that some of my favorite Penn State players to watch, some of the best talents that have come out recently, are all going to the AFC East. Are you kidding me? So talking about Olu and his ability to pass protect, and the slide for Olu Fashanu was hilariously overblown, that he was going to be available for the Steelers or the Eagles in the late teens and early 20s. He went 11th. And his pass protection ability is, the Bills don't have a player that can get around him at this point. So for the next however many years when he starts, now they don't need him to start right away because they got Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses. So it's a really good fit from a bunch of different angles, including, you know, he fits into that system as well. The question is, you know, the Jets are a dumpster fire of an organization. How are they going to mess up the support structure around Olu? It would take a lot for him to be bad at football, but they can definitely blunt the edge he gives them by just sucking. And that's what I'm really like. That's what I'm hoping for the team around Olu. Again, a great person, somebody you don't root against if you've gotten to meet him. So like, complicate that. And then I love speed rushers. I love dudes that have that bend the edge ability. And with Chop Robinson, it's not just his ability to run. It is his body control, his lean, that DeMarcus Ware coming around the corner. When Landon and I talked, our comp was Von Miller in terms of the way he plays, the style of wins, and his unbelievable burst in athleticism. Going to the Miami Dolphins, a team that is obsessed with speed. They got a speed rusher who can come in on third downs. And again, the Bills don't really have a guy that can counter that. So suck fest for Buffalo in a long-term sense. So I'm not a huge fan of his fit because those two guys fit really well with their organizations to the point that Chop Robinson, you know, he's raw, but he's got all of these pass rushing skills and, you know, intrinsic things about his bend and his ability to win and stay on his feet. And I know that everyone wants to yap about sacks, but you look at Jalen Phillips on that roster, you look at Bradley Chubb. I think they even have Shaq Barrett. So just even if he's the bird dog that's flushing the geese out of the field, somebody else is going to get the quarterback. So like there are very few ways I feel like that's going to be a bust for them. Chop Robinson, damn. And then, of course, Caden Wallace goes to the New England Patriots. That's the one where they're saying he's going to play left tackle. And here's the thing. I know, logically, that left tackle and right tackle, there are very few value differences in the NFL anymore. Because what I just talked about with the Miami Dolphins, you've got four pass rushers. The Buffalo Bills have three or four guys that they rotate all the time on both sides of the offensive line. The Jets are deep and talented at the pass rush position. And so Caden Wallace, whether it's right tackle or left tackle, he's going to go up against a lot of really good pass rushers on either side. And when they say he's going to play on the left side, and they go, are you sure about that? I still can't get over the differences, you know, that we all learned of left tackle and right tackle. But he's athletic enough to do it. You know, I'm sure he's played left tackle in practice. I'm sure he's practiced that because Penn State does this stuff all the time in contingency for what happens if we get down through our first two left tackles and then we just need to have the best players on the field. So I think Caden has done it enough, maybe not all the time, but he can do it. And he's a good football player. Like, I thought he was going to be a secret star in this draft. I thought he was going to go in the fifth round, like Hunter Norzad, and be a guy that can maybe even be a plug-and-play starter. He's the one guy of this conversation of the top players that I'm like, they might put him in a position to fail because he's not necessarily perfect for the role they're going to ask him to do. But I also think he can do it. And that's where you get when you're in the third round. So, you know, the top three guys, great fits.
Well, first of all, again, the emotion. This is multiple suck fests we've gotten from T. Frank.
I can't shake the negativity. I can't shake the negativity. So the Bills, the Patriots dominated the AFC East for 20 years because all of those organizations were god-awful. And suddenly when it's the Bills' turn to be dominant, everyone like does smart things. The Patriots draft two quarterbacks. They draft Drake May and Joe Milton. So one of them might work out and suddenly you don't get the easy pass. You know, you're not driving right through the toll road getting to the playoffs if you're the Bills. You got to earn it. And it's just so obnoxious.
Well, I'll tell you what, first of all, that emotion, again, is fun. I want to stay in the AFC East. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before. I have a nephew, Chris, who's a big Patriots fan.
So, I already don't like him, but continue.
Okay. He's not a bad kid other than the New England Patriot thing. Mm-hmm. And he asked me that very question about Caden Wallace playing left tackle. He was the first one to mention that to me. And my first thought to that was, We've never seen that. So
yeah.
What makes people think that that would work? But the other thing I want to ask you about is that Joe Milton going later in the draft. My feeling is if you could get someone with that potential upside that late in the draft at such an important position.
Yep.
Again, this was the debate I had with my nephew. I said, I thought that was a good gamble.
Yeah, just go back to the conversation we had about Howie Roseman, who signed Carson Wentz to a long-term extension and drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. Turned out to be a really smart decision. RG3 and Kirk Cousins were in the same draft to the same team. Not that you don't believe in RG3, and the knee injury is the story there, but these are the points of attrition that we're talking about, where even if you have a level of success, it doesn't guarantee sustained success at a very important position. Drake May has some flaws on his tape. You know, he's not a polished Andrew Luck level prospect. And then Joe Milton has the raw potential. So just these concepts, these ideas are really smart. And then when it comes to Caden Wallace and his ability to pass protect and to play, you know, his athleticism testing says he can play on the left side. His length, he's built like a guard, but he played tackle at Penn State and he got better and he showed that progress and he showed that, you know, going up against JT Tulamolia, who's going to be a, maybe a first round pick later, going up against, you know, the Michigan pass rushers as well, he was superior to those players. I don't know that he's the high of the high in the NFL either way, but the athleticism score, the testing metrics say that he can play on the left side, which asks a little more athleticism in a historical context, but again, like it doesn't necessarily matter anymore because everyone is focused on getting to the quarterback as a pass rusher. So that's really the conversation. And the sure thing about Wallace is that he does have that ability to kick inside and play guard. So, you know, if he doesn't work out at tackle, it's not a wasted draft pick. He's not a wasted player that can't play in the NFL. I think he could be a, you know, not just a starter, but a plus starter as a guard. So those are the things where you're talking about Caden Wallace and the fit and all the, that's where I think you feel confident overall. But the starting plan is just a little bit less of a sure thing.
All right. I want to ask you about Adisa Isaac. On the surface, I look at him going to a Ravens team that's a good organization, known for their defense. I assume that's a great fit. Is that a right assumption?
It is a great fit because they, and I wrote about this, I wrote how all of these players fit with their new teams at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com this weekend, so you can go and get some of the other details and information about some of the data and the specifics. But the Ravens have the most fascinating defense that I've seen from a college football perspective. And from an NFL perspective. Just generally from a football perspective is what I'm trying to say. They have three down concept. They are the most scheme fluid team I've seen, where certain teams will play odd fronts and even fronts and have different personnel packages. They are the team that can go fluid and seamlessly between a three down front, three defensive linemen, two outside linebackers, to a traditional four down front, and do it in game by personnel or by game plan. So Adisa Isaac is a great fit because they're going to identify what he does well and put him in situation to only do those things. The thing that I find more interesting is that this is something that they've done over time is they'll draft edge rushers or they'll find edge rushers and they'll cycle that position quite a bit. So they're not paying top of the market money for a Myles Garrett or a Nick Bosa, but they're still getting production out of talented players. So the drafting of Adisa Isaac actually to me is like, are they going to pick up the fifth year option on a Dafe Owe? Is this going to be Penn Stater replacing Penn Stater for the Ravens? I think that's going to be something interesting to see how they handle that particular transition if they pick up his fifth year option. He's been good, not great for the Ravens. So we'll see, you know, if Adisa Isaac is supplanting the Ravens pass rusher needs at edge rusher long term, because I think the player is pass rush specialist in Adisa Isaac. Given kind of the different bodies and players they have on that roster, they don't have guys that are, you know, edge rushers. They have guys that are big body physical run defenders. They have guys that are interior players that can play that five technique in a 3-4. They've got Kyle Van Noy, who's a drop player. They've got Malik Harrison, I think is his name, who is a linebacker edge hybrid, but they don't really have a guy, a fastball guy. And I think Adisa Isaac can play the run well and be, you know, a fastball guy, knowing he's not Chop Robinson with those high-end physical skills. He's got enough to be a good player, but, you know, third-round version of that.
Let me ask you about Theo Johnson going to the Giants.
This one scares me a little bit, just a little bit.
as an Eagles fan, I don't want my Penn State guys going into the same division. But yeah, with the Giants, I could give you the glass half full or half empty.
I would say the biggest thing is, how are they going to use him, and what's the plan for Darren Waller? Because he can, this has been the conversation, is about what Theo's skill set is, and can he go to a place that understands his skill set? And if there's a team and an offensive coordinator in Brian Daboll who understands players and puts them in a good position to succeed, this is a good fit. But Joe Shane and Brian Daboll are probably on their last leg with the Giants. So is he going into a situation where he's being drafted for a long-term fit? Daniel Jones, is he a starting quarterback? So again, like the Jets, this whole institutional thing could make it not matter. But I think in the context of what they are and how they drafted, he can be a Darren Waller-type player. So if they use him that way, great. If they use him as the Y tight end to Darren Waller's move tight end, I have some concerns about his productivity. But I think they're smart enough to know what he can do and put him in position to do those things, even if he is a backup to start.
All right. Very good, T. Frank. That was a fun draft conversation. Next, we take your questions and we ask T. Frank. Stay tuned for that. We've had such a great response to our F45 Training State College promotion over the last 2 weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. Starting Monday, May 6th, and running through May 21st, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training and a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three, which means it's time to ask T. Frank. We take your questions for T. Frank, and then away we go with some fantastic answers. If you want to send a question to T-Frank, just download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T-Frank button, just like Gary from Reading did. You ready to roll, T-Frank?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, here's what Gary says. What happened to Kalen King? A year ago, he was a first-round pick. Now, barely drafted. Did he suddenly get slow? What happened?
That is a great question, Gary. Okay, let's talk nuts and bolts of what happened. He didn't have as good of a year in 2023 as he did in 2022. So you can also say in that situation, in that context, corner is a volatile position. The NFL understands that. Quarterback, receiver, the guys you match up against, the situations you're in, they dictate some of these things where you can have similar play and different results. But then, in the offseason, skip the bowl game and how Penn State fans are hurt by that. Let's go to the Senior Bowl. And he's really bad. And he's not playing man coverage, not playing in these one-on-one situations and, you know, going up against the receivers he's about to cover in the NFL. He's doing a really bad job of staying in phase and not biting on double moves and just getting cooked, essentially. Then, to me, the biggest thing is he goes to the draft and runs a 4.6 to the combine. The number of guys that have been drafted with a 4.6 40 in the NFL at corner, I don't know the exact number, but it might be one, and he might be the one guy. So the Packers took a gamble on a guy who had elite production in man coverage as a sophomore, and they're banking on kind of like Rashid Walker. Here's a secret starter we can take in the seventh round. I think there's a lot of parallels between those two guys. So what happened to Kalen King? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows right now. There's theories. I think people have opinions on what happened to Kalen King, reading his own press clippings, not being making business decisions as a football player, some of the speculation. I didn't necessarily see a lot of that. I saw a guy who wasn't as confident in his assignment in 2023. And that's from a, you know, trigger downhill, a surety in coverage. I think maybe they left him alone more often, and therefore he felt like he couldn't give up the big play instead of going to make a play. Now, that's my observation from the film, but there are obviously different contexts around that particular conversation, and I've learned if there's smoke around a conversation, I don't want to immediately dismiss it. And then to me, like, the reason he fell in the draft specifically is that 4-6. I also find his fit with the Packers really interesting because they are very much betting on him being a man corner. And even if he's not a 4-6 guy, he is not a 4-4-1, 4-3-9 sort of athlete. He is not a super fast corner, maybe a low 4-4s. High 4-4s. I always do that wrong, you know, when you're counting yes. backwards. So, like, even if he's a 4-5-1, 4-4-9, somewhere in there, he's not an elite athlete cover corner. So they're banking on those instincts and that aggression coming back because they play a single high defense where he's in man coverage or in a deep third. I saw him more as a split field safety corner where he's playing some zone underneath. He's playing some quarters, which protects the corners a little more. And I know a lot of teams talked about him as a safety, you know, so now he's playing a box, you know, a versatile chess piece cover two safety role where he's playing in some deep coverage. He's playing near the box. He can play in the slot. So he's going into a situation where I don't know that his fit is perfect for the NFL. But if you're a seventh round pick, that you're not prioritized for your fit. You're prioritized for we're taking a lottery ticket to see if all those things we saw where he was playing elite man coverage in 2022, if we can get that out of him again. And if not, he was the third to last pick in the draft. So, oh well. But great, Gary, great question, and thank you for asking it the way you did, because I think it leads to a better conversation than one that is, I think, accusatory, which is, it's fair, Kalen King, it's fair to have that conversation, but it is curious because there's not one thing you can point to and go, okay, that was the problem with Kalen King.
I'm fascinated. The fascinating part to your answer to me was he might not be a low 4-4 guy, but he might be a high 4-4 guy. Well, then why did he run 4-6 something? Because I'm thinking if he's a 4-6 guy, which is essentially undraftable the way you described it, how did he have the season he did as a sophomore? If he doesn't have the physical tools, then how did he do it?
Well, that's the question, right? I don't have a good answer for you other than he played with great anticipation where he was – you know, you saw the way Daquan Hardy played against Ohio State, and you saw the way Daquan Hardy played just generally his final year, his senior year, let's just say, just for vernacular. He played with confidence and anticipation. And when you play with confidence and anticipation and you are, I don't want to say guessing, but anticipating correctly, you know what's coming. You understand the route concept and how to attack it. Then you can play faster. You can play ahead of the receiver. And you can cut them off. What he did so well in 2022 was he was in front of the receiver, preventing them from running a good route because he knew the route they were running. He cut him off and he got to the ball first. And then he had good ball skills when he got there. This is why when people talked about Joey Porter Jr. and Kalen King, they said, Joey has the better athletic skill, but Kalen is the better corner. So those intangible intelligence and instincts and the ability to play with confidence to say, you know, I know it's coming. I'm gonna beat you at what you're doing. That's what vanished in 23. And I wonder, you know, I haven't looked exactly at the splits. They played more two high defenses in 2023. They augmented some of the things where they weren't playing. I don't think they were playing as much man coverage as they were the year before. And I'm kind of off the cuff with that. So if you're taking him out of those situations and putting him in a place where, other than the Ohio State game where he was one-on-one moving with Marvin Harrison Jr., something he had never done before. Other than that game, I think they used him a little bit differently and maybe not to his skill set. So I might be wrong about his fit in the NFL. He might be better as a man coverage corner because that's what he did better at in college at Penn State.
Well, I am glad you mentioned Daquan Hardy. Our good friend Jimmy from Forest City, he writes, T. Frank, I was watching the NFL draft on Saturday afternoon and I saw Daquan Hardy going to your team, the Buffalo Bills. What were your emotions? Will he make it to their game day roster?
I would say it's 50-50. These guys at the end of the draft, if there's two guys that I don't think fit really well with their teams, it's King, and Hardy. And here's the thing. So I've talked a lot about, you know, the star position at Penn State and nickel defenses and how the NFL linebackers don't exist. And the Bills are a great example where Taron Johnson is a corner. He plays 98% of the snaps for the Bills. He is quietly a linchpin for them because he plays zone corner. He can play some man coverage down the field. And he's like filling the A gap against Shanahan teams where they use those motions to move linebackers out and move corners into the box. So Taron Johnson does that for the Bills on a regular basis. Do you think Daquan Hardy should be filling the A gap in the NFL?
No.
No. So does he fit as a starter long-term in this defense? And Brandon Bean talked about him being a nickel corner first. No, he does not fit this defense. But can you say that he's a third down specialist and a dime defender who comes on the field to cover a fourth receiver? Yeah, absolutely. I think he could do that role. But then we're talking about a specialist. The reason they drafted him, again, according to Brandon Bean, was the return game was getting out of the NFL. And nobody prioritized kick return, but the new rules that were implemented this offseason, the Bills said, you know, kind of going back to Curtis Jacobs, they drafted the linebacker out of Washington because they wanted a guy with length and thud that can go and cover kicks. You know, Curtis, I think Curtis can play, but he doesn't have those long arms and, you know, he doesn't have that play in the box to say, okay, even on special teams, we believe he can be an asset there. And then Daquan Hardy is a guy who has obvious punt return skills and obvious kick return skills. So that is why they drafted him three picks before the seventh round. So he's got to fulfill that role as a special teams player and be a real asset to then have a role on defense because they don't typically go with guys like him for their defense. I don't know that he can play on the outside in the NFL. They said they'd give him a look on the outside. So it's very much special teams dependent. Here's an area where, you know, my thought about him in the NFL that I talked about all last year was wrong because they changed the rules on the kickoff. And now there's a role for him in the NFL.
I think the other thing to point out after we talk so much about Kalen King and his performance at the combine is Daquan Hardy's performance at the combine and how that was the polar opposite of what we saw from Kalen King. He was phenomenal. All right, let's get to Brad and Perkasy. A lot of this we already covered, but I want to put it out there for Brad. He says, which Penn Stater ended up in the best situation in the NFL, and were you shocked Curtis Jacobs was not drafted?
Yes, I was shocked. I guess shocked is the wrong word, because again, we talked about going in, it's all in the eye of the beholder, and I acknowledge that I was looking on the positive side because I am a fan of Curtis Jacobs. So somebody asked me that on Twitter and I said, you know, they said scale 1 to 10. I said 5. I get the reasoning why you wouldn't draft him. I just disagree with it. Now from a fit perspective, it's hard for me to go beyond Chop. I think Chop from his particular skill set, his limitations, which I think are a little bit overblown. He does need to play better against the run. He does need to use his hands better. But I think from a fit perspective of not being asked to do any of those things if he doesn't need to, that's an elite fit. So I would go there. And I don't think there's anyone particularly close. I think Hunter Norzad is a really good fit with the Kansas City Chiefs, given that I do think that there's a little boom or bust in Hunter. As much as I have been high on his abilities, and I think he is absolutely an NFL starter, maybe even an above average starter in the right system, which he went to, he still had a really hard time blocking stunts last year. And so there's that graphic that PFF puts out about he allowed no sacks last year. And I generally have no qualms with the PFF data and the PFF college data. There are some things, you know, I know how the sausage is made there that I don't necessarily agree with, you know, in terms of he gave up no sacks as a player. Also, that doesn't include, that's just sacks. That's not quarterback hits and hurries. So generally pressure, not good for him last year. But if you want to throw out a stat that maybe is a little misleading, Hunter has the ability to be that guy. I don't know that he is that guy just yet. But Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, like, you just can't go wrong going to the Kansas City Chiefs. As much as that pains me to say.
Well, I've always said, get the player in the right organization and makes all the difference in the world. That is it for quarter three in Ask T-Frank. We got more to go in quarter number four. Stay tuned.
We've had such a great response to our F-45 Training State College promotion over the last 2 weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. Starting Monday, May 6th, and running through May 21st, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F-45 Training State College for 2 weeks free. F-45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training and a group class environment. F-45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. T. Frank, I got to tell you, this has been a fun show. I love it when T. Frank shows emotion. Between the NFL draft and our questions that we got today, this is great, T. Frank. This
you
is a
you
great
make it sound like I've had a football lobotomy.
I love to see the emotion because you are one of the most analytical people that I know. You really are, and it's great. Love you for that, T. Frank. But that makes it all the more special when we can get some emotion out of you. That's fun. All right, let's get moving. I want to shift back to, instead of those past Penn State players in the NFL draft, let's get to some of the current players. And you put out an article last week called Who Are the Losers Coming Out of Spring Practice? And that's a little bit negative for you. And I know First off, not exactly the players are losers, right?
First off, you know, this is where we have to put on our hedging hats, and analytical T. Frank is coming back. It was fallers, risers and fallers, not winners and losers, because of what you just said. And, you know, being careful, being very measured with our words about Penn State football, trying to have the best view of things possible and being more careful because people get mad, risers and fallers, not winners and losers.
Let's go with risers and fallers then. I'm presuming then we're not going to hear the word suckfest in this segment.
Certainly not. Okay. Certainly not.
Okay. Well, let's get right to it. And I think what's interesting and maybe more apparent that it's risers, that fallers and risers, is that you have a situation where for each one of these players going one way, there's another player going the opposite way. And let's start with the first one you mentioned, Dom DeLuca, who I know we both know him. He's a great guy. I think he's a great story as a walk-on and everything he's accomplished. But he's the perfect example of what you're talking about here. It's the situation that hurts him this season as far as getting more reps.
Let's think about him as a stock price. So Curtis Jacobs goes to the NFL. Abdul Carter goes to defensive end. You would look at his stock this offseason went up of, okay, this is a guy that's going to play a lot. You know, he's going to be in a base package. And the way that Tom Allen talked about his defense, the way that they've talked about the defense in general, like playing three linebackers is the identity and the personnel of his defense. But in reality, how much is he going to play? So like stock comes up and then suddenly like the more reality hits, the more it's like, maybe we're right back where we started with Dom DeLuca, where he's a guy that's, you know, you could view him as a starter if you wanted to. He's a rotational player. He's going to play. First off, where is he playing? Secondly, how many packages, how many times do they go to those packages? And that's really going to determine where he is in the linebacker pecking order. We talked about him being playing Will linebacker during the blue-white game. Is that the plan? You know, this is one of those questions coming out of spring football where during practice, we saw him not playing Will linebacker, and suddenly he's playing Will linebacker during the game. So it's kind of an unsettled faller, but more, I think, in line with the expectations we should have about Dom DeLuca, which is he's going to be a part of the defense, but if he's not a starter, I'm not shocked. If he's playing the exact same role he was before, I think I'm not shocked. So kind of the offseason stock report, he's just kind of leveled out.
Maybe that's a better name for it. This is our stock report for coming out of the spring. I like that a lot. If you have a stock report where at the, I think it's almost like the linebacker position going down because of the reps, then someone must be rising. That's the safeties, right?
Yeah, and so you would say KJ, and he wasn't necessarily in this particular article that I did, because I think there was an obvious apparency, is that a word?
I don't know.
We're going to go with apparency.
It was
apparent that Zaki Wheatley was a offseason riser. We talked about that. Talked about that in the winter. We talked about that before spring practice. James Franklin brought it up regularly. So it's a known factor that they want to play three safeties, and the guy who's going to step onto the football field is going to be Zaki Wheatley, as opposed to you already had Jalen Reed and KJ Winston. Regardless of where they line up and kind of how that particular rotation of players goes, you're going to have those three guys in the field, and the new factor there is Zaki Wheatley. So, yeah, that I think is a fair balance to those two things of linebacker down, safety up.
Let's do the stock report for the running backs. We know what we have, your blue chippers, Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, but then we have London Montgomery, Quentin Martin, and Cam Wallace all vying for that third position. Whose stock is rising? Whose stock is falling?
So it's funny because they're not always binary. So both Quentin Martin and Cam Wallace both stock up for sure. Lana Montgomery, though, you would say of the guys who maybe is being left behind in that conversation, he's the one, and he's based on the blue-white game and the feedback we've seen from the spring and from James Franklin's comments about him. You can't help but feel like his stock is falling a little bit. Because of what we've heard and seen. And again, in an environment where they have so many good football players, Lon Montgomery is a good football player. It is just, you got to be a complete package. And right now, the evidence is he's not. Again, I like London. I like him. I like his game. You know, I've interviewed him. I think he's a kid who wants to be great. But those are the margins, right? You've got to be able to put together a complete game, and he needs to use this summer to get bigger, stronger, more physical, and then he can be right back in that race. But right now, that is not the case.
This is where I give James Franklin credit. We heard that statement. He talked about London Montgomery not changing his body, not getting bigger. But he put it right out there for London Montgomery. Here's what you need to do to get on the field. Get bigger and stronger. That's part of it. All right. A lot of names. I'm not going to go to specifics. I'm going to let you do that. But on the offensive line, a lot of moving parts there. A lot of guys stock up, some guys who are stocked down.
Let's start with the left guard position, because I think that one's the clearest of the duality here. Vega Ioane has been available and playing for, you know, a season and a spring. JB Nelson has not consistently been available and playing in the season in the spring. And Vega is a very talented football player. You give him more opportunities, eventually he's going to turn it into very positive play. So to me, this is a situation where if you say stock down for JB Nelson, and that's what I wrote, it's because Vega's stock has gone up. And we're still talking about guys that could timeshare that position, but JB has been the starter over the last, you know, since Landon Tangwall had to medically retire. I don't see it that way anymore. I saw Vega playing better and more confident, more physical. We talked about this, you know, in our post blue white game. And JB, like, you've got to be available. And he's not a sure thing to be a standout anyway. It's not like he put on elite tape to begin with. So in comparable situations, the guy who's playing and trending upward is going to be the guy that I think is the starter at that position, unless JB can catch up.
So that's starting at guard. We've got so many young players, though, who are part of the mix at offensive line. Guys who came in the last 2 years, that's really a mixed bag of who's going up and who's going down as far as their stock report.
Yeah, and this is an area where I think Javon Williams is not a faller in any means. It's just an assessment of where he is and where fans maybe hoped he was. And I don't necessarily enjoy that I added him to this list, because we all knew it was going to take time for him to learn how to pass block and learn how to the techniques and the fundamentals of the position, because he'd never done them before. And the blue-white game was a clear indication that he is not going to be ready this year unless something drastic happens over the offseason or the summer season. The guy that I would say you could say stock down, despite all of those things, is Alex Birchmeier, because let's talk about his timeline at Penn State. comes in, a guy that we were talking about, can he contribute early, even if he doesn't play? He still burns his red shirt, doesn't burn his red shirt. He's definitely going to be a guy that plays in four games. Going to start him at right tackle, see what he can do. Quickly bumps inside to right guard. This spring, they're deficit of offensive linemen. So what happens is freshman Cooper Cousins is the guy starting at guard. Alex Birchmeier is kicked over to left guard, a position where we talked about they have two very strong candidates in JB Nelson and Vega Ioane. So he's getting farther away from playing time and being in the two deep with this particular move. Is it full term? Is it long term? Is it not long term? I don't know. But they're trying to find a fit for him right now. And I think that's a concerning thing. So I would say the one that I'm concerned about in terms of how things are going, independent of offensive lineman timeline, which is not the same as receiver, and some of these guys like Anthony Donko and Cooper Cousins are breaking that time, that learning curve and the timeline curve. Alex Birchmeier is still in that context, not getting to the place that we expected him to be, and so there's some concerning things around that. He still has plenty of time to turn it around, but it is a turn it around situation for me at this point.
I like that you set that in terms of the expectation level. I think as fans, what we got to remember with the red shirt, both Javen Williams and Alex Birchmeier, they're red shirt freshmen. And yep. Maybe it's stocked down a bit, but then now in contrast, Anthony Donka, who came in along with the more highly regarded Birchmeier and Williams, he ended up the starting right tackle or the tackle for the bowl game. And you have Cooper Cousins, true freshman, looks like he's already surpassed those other two players.
Yeah, and this is, I think, the way we should understand kind of the conversation around players is that we're, in my mind, I don't have percentages, right? But you're playing the percentages. When it comes, especially to offensive linemen, so we have an opinion of what these guys are from a physical standpoint, from a production standpoint, and from a trait standpoint in high school. So you would say the percentages, the likelihood that Alex Birchmeier is a guy that contributes early might be over 50%. But again, I'm not putting any numbers on this. I don't go through and give percentages, but it might be 51 or 52%. You know, which is high if you consider that guys participating as young offensive linemen is like 30, maybe. And maybe I'm even too high on we thought it was 50%. That's the point of like the percentages don't mean anything. Maybe it was just closer to 50-50, and it turns out it is much closer to the 30% or 20% or whatever the likelihood that is low of him contributing early in his career. And so, you know, with guys like Donko and Birchmeier and Cooper Cousins, you can feel confident. And Cooper Cousins, I think, had an overwhelming percentage, you know, in your mind. So you felt confident and then he made you feel better about those things. But it is very much a, we don't know for sure, but we see these factors and add them up to a confidence factor in our mind, but it is not like overwhelming in any of these situations.
And when we see what the coaches do, where they played Cooper Cousins in the blue-white game, that just reconfirms what we had felt all along. All right, T. Frank, great show. I really enjoyed it today, but that's going to have to be it. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
We've had such a great response to our F45 Training State College promotion over the last 2 weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. Starting Monday, May 6th, and running through May 21st, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training and a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.